Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Sam Pinkham here, sitting in for Chris Evans and welcoming you to the latest instalment of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the always delightful Hugh Bonneville charms us with tales of playing legendary children's author Roald Dahl in the moving new Sky original film, To Olivia. The incredible Angelica Bell shares how you can get involved in The Edit, the new digital programme for schools and home learning from Sky and Adobe. Scottish superstars Deacon Blue have us all dancing with joy with their brand new mini-album, Riding on the Tide of Love. And the poptastic Bastille frontman Dan Smith talks about the band's brilliant new documentary, Reorchestrated. All of that and loads more still to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us, who's our first guest?
From Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to the BFG, the story of the man behind the stories is just as worth telling. The superb new Sky original, To Olivia, is available on Sky Cinema from Friday. And here to tell us more is someone that's proved he knows his way around a story or two. It's the majestic Hugh Bonneville!
What an intro, boys. What an intro. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Obviously written mainly by me and just performed by Dave. He's brilliant. Hugh, you were on a year or so ago. Do you remember your last intro and did you prefer this one? Which is your fave?
This one.
This one. Delighted.
This one. Oh, good, good.
This
good,
one.
Good,
well
good,
done, yeah, David. Well done. Hugh, I watched To Olivia last night, and obviously heart-wrenching and sad, but comforting as Vassos described it early this morning. But I tell you one thing that from the very, very beginning, I thought, and you agreed, Vass, is that I was thinking, that's not Hugh Bonneville. That can't. Is that Hugh? That is. No, it's not.
Yeah,
it
you had to
be.
Start speaking, Hugh, for us to know that it was you.
Well, yeah, we'd opted to go for a sort of slight physical look that approximated, the spirit of Roald Dahl, if not the actual. And So I hope it didn't distract for too long and that you were able to just get stuck into the story.
It was wonderful. I think, am I right in saying, I hope you don't mind me saying this, a prosthetic nose involved?
Oh, it was nose, cheeks, teeth, hair, everything.
Did you prefer that look? Did you prefer the look? Would you stick with that? You're happy to go back? Go on.
It's not a pulling look, let's face it, but it just helped with our approach to the whole project, because I mean Keely looks so like Patricia Neal, whom she was playing. So I thought, oh, better catch up, better try and do something to look a bit more like Roald. But I mean, there are different ways of approaching any part. I mean, Dirk Bogarde played Roald Dahl in a TV film many years ago, and he just put on a cardigan. That was it. So they're horses for courses.
For those who don't know, the film is out on Friday. It's called To Olivia. Can you tell us the story of To Olivia?
It's really a sort of journey through a family facing the worst imaginable fate, which is the loss of a child, and how they navigate that. And it's really an analysis of grief, I suppose, in simple terms, and the way that different people react at different stages of that journey. And in their case, Patricia was a well-known celebrated American actor. Roald was not a well-known author at that stage, to the early 60s. He hadn't he'd written James and the Giant Peach, but it hadn't found a publisher in the UK, and he was writing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and that, of course, changed everything. And during this period, they lost their daughter to measles, and it's really how they navigate that. And to be honest, Roald didn't navigate it well at all. He sort of shut down completely, and Patricia, his wife, had to sort of carry the family really for a long time. But out of it came a sort of strength and a unity and a creative energy. And in our story, the way we've shaped the story, it ends with just a sort of triumph for both of them.
Hugh, did you like Roald Dahl after being him?
I think I understood him a little better. I know he was, a very, very passionate father, but he was a very complicated man indeed. And some would say, he wasn't the best companion. when they met him. I have met a few people who sort of said they'd met him at book signings when they were kids and they'd taken their books up to him. And I said, oh, that must have been amazing. He said, well, no, he was quite grumpy.
Right.
But I've also, you know, it's in the biographies and essays and so on that he was a very difficult and spiky man and liked nothing more than to see people squirm at a you know, dinner party or something over something he'd said, just to sort of, you know, get a reaction out of people. So I think he was a loose cannon at times, and obviously in later life he wrote some pretty unpalatable things, and you know, that's a hard thing to keep in balance with the great writer that he was.
Did anything surprise you about Roald when you were working up to the character?
I think really that I knew so little about him. You know, obviously I've been familiar. I wasn't a great aficionado of his books by any means, but I'd read some, particularly his, you know, his short stories when I was a teenager. Those are the ones that had really captured me.
Yeah.
And the Tales of the Unexpected. So I knew he had this dark, twisted imagination, which was, you know, what of course the kids, you know, young readers love. But I think I hadn't known what a great inventor he was, what a passionate man he was in terms of not giving up. His son Theo had an accident. He's you know, fortunately, you know, fully recovered. He's alive and doing well. But when he was a kid, he got hit by his pram got hit by a taxi, and he suffered head injuries. Now, you know, he Roald went on to invent a device that would. Or to co-invent a device that would relieve pressure on the brain. Equally, when Patricia, after the events of our film, suffered a stroke, he was ruthless in his determination to see her get better. Some would say, you know, to the point of cruelty, but actually it became his methods of helping restore her speech became a recognized therapy. So he was a driven man. He was not one to give up. And, you know, this is a man who, you know, had crashed in the desert and the war. And, you know, he was a man of derring do and invention, a charmer, you know, a cocktail party aficionado in America, married a glamorous star. He was a man of many, many colors, some of them less palatable than others. But I found him fascinating, if not endearing.
Hugh, thank you so much for coming on. The film is absolute must watch. It comes to Sky Cinema this Friday and it's called To Olivia. Hugh, we'll speak to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you're looking for a creative spark, then look no further than our next guest. Sky have teamed up with Adobe for The Edit, a new program that gets kids doing what they do best, being creative. So here to tell us more is a lady bursting with both sunshine and plenty of ideas. It's the awesome Angelica Bell!
Hello.
Hi, Angelica. Hi, Angelica.
Sunshine. How are you?
Beaming with sunshine and ideas, was that? What
she,
you
is. Yes,
she is.
Every time.
In fact, last time you were in, Angelica, it was sunny, and you were telling me that you were starting to run and you were running a bit further. How's that all going?
It's good. Do you know what? Your advice that you gave me was spot on. So I remember I telling you that I was doing 5Ks, and I've been trying to keep that going during lockdown. I find that the fitness has and having that routine has sort of given me some focus. Now, on my route, my 5K route, and you were like, Angelica, don't just run it. You're not going to get better. So there's this hill. So every time I get to the bottom of the hill, Vassos, you are in my head, and I sprint as fast as I can to the top. And I have noticed that my fitness levels got much better just by pushing myself. So I am getting better. I'm not as good as you. I'll never be as good as you, Vassos.
It's not.
But you are in my head.
It's not a competition, though, is it? But you did say you wanted to be better than you were yesterday, and that's how you do it, by just sort of mixing it up
exactly.
A bit, running up hills. Hills are great. They're like speed training in secret, in disguise.
Yeah, when you get to the top, oh my goodness, you feel so good.
Yeah.
How long is the hill, Angelica?
I'd say it's about half a kilometre.
Half a K? So 500
yeah,
metres?
Yeah, so it's a gradual one, and then it gets the last, say, 50 metres, then you're feeling it.
The a lot of people who are into super fitness training, that's all they do is hill running, don't they? Sprint up, job back down, sprint
fartlek.
Up.
Fartlek, you told me that.
Yeah, fartlek is Swedish for speed play. So that's when you just think, I'm going to go fast until that lamppost, and then go fast until that lamppost, and then slow down. And then when you feel like going fast again, you go, okay, well, now I'm going to go fast for the next three corners. And so it's not sort of regimented. Every time you get a hill, you have to go fast. It's just whenever you feel like going fast, go a bit faster.
Well, and sprint as fast as you can. Sorry, we're bogged down in running now. That's definitely not what you're here to talk about, Angelica.
No, but the thing is, that running and exercise has given me the determination and drive to get involved in other things during lockdown. Do you know what I mean? Which is good. And this program is called The Edit, and it's amazing. And that's why I wanted to get involved with it, because It's for schools and it's for home learning, so students, parents can get involved. And it's about inspiring the next generation of media talent, you know, by breaking down those industry barriers to entry of it, because, you know, we know how it's much more accessible for some students, and also bridging the digital skills gap. And like you were talking about earlier, you know, that our young people now are so savvy with digital skills online, and we want to focus that in a really positive way and get them to create stories, because they are the future storytellers. Let's face it.
And so is this, so obviously, you know, as I said on air, my kids, Evie and Nancy, Evie's 11, Nancy's 7. So they're not super, super young, but they are well into making videos. They film their guinea pigs all the time, and they produce these amazing little videos with music and with special effects and online graphics, on-screen graphics, all sorts of things. I mean, they blow my mind, especially Nancy, who's only 7. So is the edit all about improving their skills or introducing other kids to these skills?
I think it's a mixture. It's about improving their skills, but also trying to sort of focus on low-income areas as well, where children might not have access to, you know, this editing software, which if they get involved, they will be provided with the editing software and also curriculum-aligned lesson plans as well to help them. So it's about, it's inclusive, it's for everybody. And what we want students to do, we want to challenge them to create a short video news report about climate change. And we know how climate change really is quite important topic of the moment for lots of young people who are concerned about the world they're living in right now, and they're acutely aware of it, but also the world they're going to be occupying when they get older in, you know, 20 years time. And we saw how children in the UK and Ireland are passionate about climate action. We remember in 2019 when there was that mass global climate strike, and loads of children attended it, and I think this is a fantastic way for them sort of to channel their fears, their thoughts, their ideas into creating digital content, whether it's with their school, whether it's at home, whether it's, you know, individuals, whatever. We want it to be however each student feels they want to tell their story and get involved with this competition, which Sky and Adobe have set up.
And so what do they do then? So they come up with an idea as to how they're going to, what they're going to produce, and then they produce it, and then how do they submit it?
All the information is on skyacademystudios.com. There are softwares there, there's tools there. They also be able to use Sky News footage as well. How cool is that? Because you know how Sky News, they do everything well and slick.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to use all those resources. Go to the website there. You can find out about it and submit your entries by April 23rd. I don't want to get bogged down right now with all the minutiae, because everything is clearly laid out, and there's tools and little packages that tells you what you can do, and for teachers as well. And the winning video will have news report will be broadcast on Sky News FYI program.
Wow!
The school will win a 12-month Adobe for Education Creative Cloud subscription. So that's sort of like a package, you know, like Photoshop, editing tools and stuff, which schools have to pay for. But can you imagine having a school be able to have those resources for 12 months? And also, they'll receive an all-expenses-paid trip to the Sky Academy studios. So they can see how TV works, how they can, you know, how it all happens behind the scenes and stuff. And I might pop along as well.
Thank you so much, Angelica. How's Michael doing? How's lovely Michael?
He's doing all right. He's doing a lot of teaching as well at the moment. And he's just, you know, his students are fantastic, and he's putting everything into it. I think also a big shout out to all teachers out there at the moment who are doing a fantastic job. They are on it, and I know that he's like, I know it's half term, he's like, he's got marking planned and all these bits and bobs, and also he's doing Virgin Groove as well.
I know, I heard him yesterday. Yeah. He's very good, isn't he?
He's a groovy teacher.
He is a groovy teacher. He is. I mean, how cool would it be if your school teacher is a presenter also on Virgin Radio Groove? He's a little bit too good, if I'm honest. He's a little bit too. I heard him thought, oh, no, that was good. Very funny. All right, well, send him our love. Lovely speaking to you, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, lots of love. I'll keep running.
Keep running, run up hills.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
They're the finest pairing to come out of Scotland since Neeps and Tatties, and arguably much tastier. Their new album, Riding on the Tide of Love, is out now, and here to tell us all about it are Ricky and Lorraine from the pitch-perfect pop powerhouse that is the one and only Deacon Blue!
Morning, Ricky. Morning, Lorraine.
Good morning. Which one is Neeps and which one's Tatties?
I couldn't possibly say.
That is a great question. So, Ricky and Lorraine, I presume, obviously, normally the case when we interview bands in the current climate, normally they're not together, but I presume you two are stood next to each other.
Yes. We are, Sam, yes.
Sam, we've been in a bubble for a long, long time.
For those of you who don't know, Ricky and Lorraine are together romantically for 30 years, as well as being bandmates. And you absolutely floored me at 8:35 this morning. Have you been listening to Virgin Radio this morning?
Of course.
Oh, yes. That is, honestly, it's so touching to hear that response. It's thank you very much.
Well, if you weren't here at 8:35 this morning, we played their cover, Deacon Blue's cover of Always On My Mind, written, but most people don't know, by Wayne Carson, Johnny Christopher and Mark James in 1971, covered, of course, by Elvis and Willie Nelson, the Pet Shop Boys, but now covered by Deacon Blue. I presume it's not the first time you've played it together.
No, what used to happen, we used to do a song at the end of the show, kind of an elongated encore, where we just kind of carried on that we hadn't finished and come back and sort of played, you know, a cover version. And we were kind of changing it around a bit, and we thought that it was a great song to play in our last tour. It's a kind of love song to the audience, so we used to play it as our song to
sing
the
along
audience.
At the end, kind of.
And of course, everyone knows it, and the lyrics are just really about that. It's about, you know, taking people seriously.
I mean, it totally floored me. Bassos and Amelia had left the studio, and I was in bits. And luckily, they came running in with about 30 seconds to go. You're right. So, yeah, I'm fine. Because the thing is about this show is a very emotional show to produce and to present, this radio show. But obviously, because I'm filling Chris's boots, you know, there's a lot of energy in that guy, and I like to try and reflect that. But sometimes when you hear such a beautiful piece of music, it just takes you down. And obviously,
it has. Does to us, isn't it? And it just catches you unawares. And I think in these times, I think tears are much closer to the surface for most of us. And you hear a piece of music that means something to you or moves you, and before you know it, you're in tears. Happens to us all.
And how does it work with songwriting? Do you write together?
We did write together on this new song, which is not normal, actually. But Lorraine and I, I normally write,
yeah.
But we have written before together. Yeah. And this just came about by a little bit of nice sort of...
Well, let's face it, Ricky's the songwriter.
He's the songwriter, which I knew, but you obviously get involved, Lorraine, especially because you're together. Are you married? I keep saying together romantic. Are you married?
We had our 30th wedding anniversary last May in lockdown.
Oh, come on! Happy wedding anniversary. 30 years. So two questions then. A, how do you stay together for 30 years, especially working in the industry that you guys work in? I mean, it must have had its tough times. But also, B, what happens if you disagree? So if Ricky's written a vocal and Lorraine, you go, you've done better, or it could be this. Do you ever speak up, Lorraine, or do you just go, let's go with him, let's trust him?
He calls me the editor, Sam, because he's writing at home in the studio at home and I'm in the house. And if I hear something I like, I come in and say, make encouraging noises.
Right.
And if I don't come in, he'll say, so you didn't come in, you didn't like that. And I'm like, nah, not really. So I have to, because, you know, it's my band too, and we're going to be performing this. And I just, if you love someone, you have to be honest with them. But generally, I'm able to say, I think that's brilliant. So that's quite good.
Ricky, did you hear the gap between her saying, this is my band, and two?
I know. This is our band.
This is my band. Two.
So
what happened? So Dignity is one of my favourite songs of all time. What happened? The lyrics are just, beautiful and fantastic. And there's a real picture built in your mind as you listen to Dignity. Was there anything, Lorraine, about Dignity you thought, Ricky, back to the drawing board? Or did he nail it from the very start?
He wrote that one before he was asking my opinion. So yeah. I have to bow out of that one.
Oh, I see.
I think that was technically before late. That was really early on, actually. Yeah, really early on. But a song that, you know, it's just amazing when you have a song that you've written in one context. I mean, I was written in 1985.
Yeah,
And to think that people still relate to it is just a lovely compliment. I'm just so flattered that people still, you know, just feel touched by the song, and it still has life in it, you know, still still seems to come back.
But we still play it all the time on Virgin. We play it all the time. I love it. So you work incredibly hard. In the last 10 years, you've released 5 new albums in 10 years. And you released an album last year, City of Love, and now another one, Riding on the Tide of Love. But they're linked, are they?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, we were a bit disappointed because obviously we put a new album out that came out about a week. This is in City of Love, and it came out about a week before lockdown. So, you know, all the touring that we had planned for 2020 didn't happen. And we were trying to think of ways in which we wanted to stay in touch with our audience. And it was very difficult. We had people doing home concerts. We'd done some home sessions. And eventually the song surfaced called Riding on the Tide of Love, which we'd forgotten about. And we thought, well, actually, that sounds like a nice kind of add-on for the album. And it became a little lockdown project, really, for us to finish all these songs that we had half finished. And put out the record. And originally, I said we were going to do something around the tour. Tour never happened. But this is our sort of interim project to keep, you know, to keep faith with people, I guess.
Tell us about City of Love.
Actually, oddly enough, City of Love was written, about a fact that I discovered that St. Valentine's, whose anniversary has just been, bones are stored in Glasgow. And it was really a song about, you know, that inspired by that. Just a song inspired by the fact that cities that are sometimes so oppressive and sometimes places people don't want to be can also be places that just great harmony and just, you know, I suppose community as well. So that was what we were trying to, you know, talk about. And we were going to go on a tour of cities of love, places that we actually, all around the UK, the cities that we're really very fond of.
But we're going to do that.
We're still going to do it.
That's a great idea. With personal connections to each city.
Oh, it feels like that. Over the years, I think we've played in every city and town in the UK. So they all have kind of personal connections. Well, most of them, we know people everywhere now. So we can't wait to get back out and reconnect with people.
Guys, we can't wait for you to do that. We're sending all our love from London to Glasgow. Take care of yourself, Ricky and Lorraine. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Thanks for making me sob at 8:35. Take care, guys. Bye now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We've already heard from a handful of our top-notch guests, but there's still so much more to come. BAFTA breakthrough Brit Malachi Kirby delves deep into his new Sky original high-stakes financial drama, Devils. From politics to dancing to culinary creations, Ed Balls dishes up the details on being crowned this year's winner of Celebrity Best Home Cook. The unstoppable Billy Munger tells us all about his mind-blowing walking, cycling and kayaking feat for Red Nose Day, Billy's Big Red Nose Day Challenge. The bursting with knowledge Dr. Range charges through the pages of his new book, How to Grow Up and Feel Amazing, The No Worries Guide for Boys. All of that and more still to come, so let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Bastille's feature-length tour documentary, Reorchestrated, is available now on Amazon Prime Video. And here to tell us how they've quite literally added some strings to their bow is the really quite marvellous Dan Smith!
Dan Smith! Good morning, Dan.
That was the best introduction I've heard. I can't believe you're the first person that I've spoken to who's thought to say that. That was brilliant.
Yes! You've done it, Dave. You can retire happy. Dan, we've all seen Reorchestrated. Whether you're a fan of Bastille, super fan of Bastille, or you just like their music, the one thing that we've all fallen more for you as a band and as people because you were so honest and so raw in it. But can you tell us how it all came about? Because obviously you can't just walk into a room with 50 musicians and go, guys, start playing and we'll sing along. How on earth do you make this kind of thing happen?
Well, we did. A few years ago, we were asked to do a charity show for a charity called Streets of London in a little church in North London. And thought we just wanted to do something special with it. So we decided to completely make it really easy for ourselves and completely change and basically orchestrally remix all of our songs. So we worked with a couple of friends, a little gospel choir and some strings musicians and brass. And we basically just flipped all of our songs on their heads. And I got so obsessed with how that gig went that I sort of got it in my head that we should do it on a bigger scale. And so, yeah, kind of challenged everyone we worked with to help us make it happen on a tour around the UK and Europe with an orchestra, finishing in the Royal Albert Hall, which, you know, it was one of the most amazing gig nights of our lives. But I think for everyone that works with us was like, why are you doing this? You're like in the midst of your second album going into a third.
Yes.
You're like, yes, a kind of rock band, I guess, in some people's eyes or whatever. Like, you don't need to do this. It's a kind of strange thing to voluntarily take on. But it was just something that we felt really passionately about, and it kind of ended up last year with this show in Hamburg with a 50-piece orchestra and a 12-piece choir and just these completely mad different symphonic versions of our songs that it was the most kind of, I'm not very good at talking about what we do in a positive way, but it was the most like affecting thing for us that I feel like we've ever done. And yeah, it was just a real like bizarre labor of love. And our friend Tom basically is a mate. He used to live with Kyle. He was his housemate when we first started out as a band. And he started making films about us as a uni project, and he basically never left. So for 8 years, he's just been on the road with us, collecting footage, a lot of which will hopefully never, ever, ever see the light of day. but yeah, he just had all this stuff. And then, yeah, it kind of, we wanted to celebrate these mad gigs we were lucky enough to do. And that's where this film kind of came out of.
What I loved about it is I loved its rawness and its honesty, because I know that you were filmed individually as well as together. And yeah. This probably enabled you to be more open and honest about each other and about your feelings and what have you. We were talking about, there's one bit in there about Kyle fearing that he wasn't good enough as a pianist. So he went off and had piano lessons. And as a band, you didn't just boot him out and say, which obviously most bands would do. We all know how ruthless the music industry is. They would just boot them out. And you said, no, you go and have some piano lessons and then come back and we're keeping it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I think I don't know. It's as a sort of film technique, I guess. Tom, who knows us really well, and Toby, who we worked with on it, who directed it, who we don't know at all. We do now, obviously, but they sort of felt like taking us all separately and interviewing us and asking us just to be a bit more honest than we normally are, because you know what it's like in kind of when we're promoting songs or doing interviews, like we're not guarded, but you know, there's a lot of stuff you're just not going to talk about imposter syndrome on like a breakfast show or whatever. It's just not that interesting or for people. But we just felt like with this film, the idea of a moderately successful band doing a gig that went really well with the big orchestra, you know, that's not a particularly interesting story. And to try and say something that was worth saying for people who may not like our music, and you know, it was more about trying to make a film about creativity and about the sort of struggles of that and about, yeah, imposter syndrome, how weird it is to be in a band, how lucky we are, but also, you know, the sort of the kind of struggles that come with it. And stage fright, all those things. I guess we didn't realise it would become a film about that. And I think it's a much more kind of nuanced and interesting film than just a concert movie or whatever. So I think they did an amazing job. And I think a lot of that's down to us as a band not really having any editorial control. We sort of just sat back and let them sift through everything and decide what would be the most sort of interesting, inclusive tale to tell.
Dan, is it fair to say that any piece of music, any track ever, could be improved if an orchestra was performing along or behind it?
So, I don't know. I think maybe. I mean, for some reason, the only thing that popped into my head just then was Baby Shark, which I can't, I don't know how that would But I've probably been hanging out with my nephew too much. But maybe. I always think when we do covers, and we love to do covers, you know, on our mixtapes and whenever we do sessions, and take music that people maybe don't respect enough or that is kind of seen as disposable, and by rejigging it and kind of representing it in a different way, I think it can really add weight to something. And definitely if you stick an orchestra behind something, it just really, the sense of like gravitas that comes with, maybe it's knowing that there's that many actual people on stage who know what they're doing,
that
really just lifts it in such an amazing way. I've got to mention like Johnny who did the arranging. He's a mate of ours. He's in a band called Public Service Broadcasting, and he's toured with us for years as a trumpet player. So to kind of realize when we asked him to do this, that he was in secret like an absolute genius when it came to arranging and the things that he brought to it, in terms of, it's not just like we like stuck some strings on Bastille tracks. These are completely, completely rethought, reimagined, totally upside down versions. And he just did such an amazing job. So it's that's been a real kind of like amazing thing to see in a friend as well.
Oh, Dan, I mean, Dan, I could talk to you for 12 hours. Thanks for coming on the show, mate. Take care of yourself.
Thank you so much.
We'll speak to you
Thanks
soon.
For having me.
All right. Cheers, buddy. Bye. Reorchestrated is available now on Amazon Prime Video. You will love it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you like your murder mysteries with lots of pretty people, fast cars and oodles of cash, then look no further. The brilliant brand new Sky Original series Devils is available on demand in full from tomorrow. So now, it's better the devil you know. Well, he's not a devil, but we're going to get to know him. It's the star of the show, Malachi Kirby!
Hello, Malachi! Morning!
Good morning.
How was your intro? Do you love it?
I'm dancing in my living room.
Good man. And where is your living room? Where are we speaking to you? You sound like you're on Skype. Are you in London? Where do you live?
Yes, I'm just in Caterham.
Oh, okay, just down the road. Yeah, okay. Well,
no, sorry, most people don't know it.
I know it. It's where the famous car is. Well, car, obviously, first from. But Well, look, thanks for coming on the show, Malachi. It's great to have you here. Now, tomorrow starts a brand new series on demand through Sky. It is a Sky original on Sky Atlantic. All episodes available tomorrow. It's called Devils. Malachi, what's it about? Where's it set? Who's in it? And why is it called Devils?
Okay, so Devils is basically based on a true story. It's not exactly true, just for FYI, but it's based on a true story about the events that led to the financial crisis in 2008. It's got an international cast. You've got Alessandro Borghi, Patrick Dempsey, myself, Laia Costa, Paul Chowdhury. It's an amazing cast that we've got involved. And what was the other question?
So where's it set? It's set in London and Italy?
Okay, yes. It's set between London, New York and Italy, yes.
And why is it called Devils?
I think it's cool. I mean, I'm going to leave that for the audience to answer, but personally, I think it's called Devils because basically what we do is we look at this world of banking and trading and we realise that not everything is what it seems. And I think the title lends itself not to specific people involved in the show, but a system in place that is essentially evil and corrupt.
I watched it last night. I watched episode one last night of series one. And it was quite late last night when I watched it. And I was nervous that I was going to fall asleep because we get up so early to do our job. And I'm very tired by 8 o'clock at night. And I was watching it at 8 o'clock at night. And I thought, listen, there was no falling asleep going to happen. It is absolutely fantastic. Malachi, have you seen Billions?
I haven't.
Okay, so Billions.
I know I need to watch it.
Yeah, so Billions is set in a hedge fund in the States. Is a similar kind of thing. I think it is. I've only watched one episode of Devils, but it's a similar kind of thing, and it is, and it was massive. But this for me has the potential to be even better, even better. Do you know how accurately it represents the world of investment banking?
I don't. I mean, I know that as you watch it, you'll see actual real clips of footage from real life. So it lends itself to that. And I know it's based on a book written by a writer called Guido Maria Brera, who was an actual trader. He wrote the book in Italian. So if you don't speak Italian, you can't really read it. But now you can watch the show. and it's translated for you. So it's definitely using things that actually happened to tell the story. But we've dramatized it a bit.
And so how did it come about? How were you in it when you first saw the script? What did you think?
When I first saw the script, I fell in love with it. I mean, the character of Oliver, he is an amazing character to play. His arc is incredible. He's probably one of the most fun characters I've ever played in my career, to be honest. So I was immediately drawn to it.
He's about the only nice person in it, isn't he?
Oh, gosh. Possibly. Everyone's really nice in real life.
No, I know. But the only nice character in it. Really stands out is how lovely Oliver, your character, is in it. Because everybody else has this edge to them that we're, I mean, for most of us, I've got two or three friends of mine who are investment bankers. And I know that they have a good side to them, but they're all cut from the same sort of cloth. They're all tough. They're all very competitive and incredibly driven. They all have these piercing eyes, which could cut diamonds, which is well represented. In Devils, because those eyes exist, it appears to me, in every investment banker. But you really stand out in it. And you're in it. Well, it appears to me you're in it. I've only seen one episode. Because despite not having a wealthy upbringing as your character, because you've got this super brain, the rich, wealthy kids want you on their side.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he grows up in a council estate and he's had to become very streetwise to survive. And what he realizes is that his ability to read people to survive is actually a bankable skill in a bank, in the trading world. And there is a particular character that we realize mirrors him, who's already made it to the peak of success, but started in a very similar background to Oliver. And so we find that out along the, once we go through the story.
And have you, I mean, obviously you learned a lot about the world of investment banking since taking part in this amazing series, Devils. If I could offer you a career as a super rich Aston Martin driving helicopter flying investment banker, as opposed to continuing on your amazing acting career, would you take it?
No.
Why? It looks incredibly exciting and sexy.
Prior to doing the show, probably I would have not hesitated to say yes. But doing it, it's made me realise, and as I think also for Oliver, he also realises, because he's like this bright young student who's eager to impress. Problem is, he's eager to impress the wrong people. And what he realises is that, you know, he knows they're rich, but what he doesn't know is how they got rich. And I think the pressure, not even the pressure they're under, but just the power that they have in their hands at the click of a button to change people's lives, that is, I think it's personally too much power for one man. So I wouldn't want that on my shoulders.
All right. Listen, buddy, it's great watching your career. We just think you're doing a brilliant job, and this is such a different role to the roles that you've played, like in Black Mirror, for example. Very, very different, but you absolutely nail it. So thanks for coming on the show to tell us all about it. It's called Devils. It is available from tonight on Sky Atlantic, on Sky On Demand. And I tell you, a big old thumbs up from me. Malachi, thanks for coming on the show. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
And enjoy the success of this. I know you will.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's gone from cooking up a storm in Westminster to taking home the bacon in BBC One Celebrity Best Home Cook. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man that knows his way around a Herbie lamb cutlet just as much as the ballot box. It's the one and only Ed Balls.
Ed Balls! Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Sam.
Let's talk about your great, great success, because we've just found out that you've won this fabulous TV show, Celebrity Best Home Cook. For those who haven't seen it, you can watch it on BBC iPlayer, but for those who haven't seen it, tell us what it's all about.
Well, it was a cooking show, which for the first two series, they had members of the public, and then they decided to get some of us tired old faces back on and do Celebrity Best Home Cook. And we started with 10 of us, and each week we have to do a challenge set by Mary, but we can come with our own recipe. Then we then get given a special ingredient called Chris Bavin, and we have 1 hour with no recipe to do something. And then the people who didn't do well get put into the eliminator round, where Angela Hartnett sets a crazy task. We have 35 minutes to cook from scratch. I did a crab ravioli, a lemon meringue tart, and also another one which has gone from my mind. And then at the end, whoever does the worst of those dishes goes out, and all the way through to the final. And the final was me, Tom Reed Wilson, and Rachel Johnson, the journalist, who is also related to the Prime Minister, but she's most importantly a journalist.
And Tom, to be fair, this is my first introduction to Tom Reed Wilson. He apparently is the concierge or the receptionist on Celebs Go Dating. What a character he is!
He was lovely, my gosh. I mean, he could find an innuendo in any kitchen implement. I mean, anyone. And he has a lovely use of words, and he was really fun and very generous. I think the thing was, we filmed this in the middle of lockdown. We were so pleased to actually get out and get to meet other people. And Keo did a brilliant job, because it was so hard to make that production work, and everybody wanted everybody else to do well. But the other thing was, because cooking and home cooking is so much about family, and everybody was bringing recipes they'd learned from their mums and dads or grandparents or whatever, we all kind of wanted them to do well. So there was a sort of warm vibe to it, which and hopefully it will inspire lots of mums and dads who maybe don't cook yet to have a go, because if I can do it.
Well, you know, that's what I was saying to Vass earlier on this morning, because I was saying that, you know, if Ed Balls can do it, then we can all do it. I obviously don't mean that. But they are dishes that, I mean, definitely I couldn't cook as well as any of you can cook. But they are sort of relatable dishes. Yeah. It's not like watching the Bake Off, where you think, I could just never bake that without years of practice. We could have a go at what you've done.
And it's not like MasterChef, where it's very technical. Although some of the eliminator challenges got really, really difficult. But it's much more about home cooking. And what you realise there is, it is all about things you learn, the smells from your childhood, things you've done with your family. The other thing, though, of course, which is really hard about it, I mean, you know, we are being judged by Dame Mary Berry and Angela Hartnett and Chris Bravin. You go forward, and I'm doing my lasagna, which my mum taught me when I was 8 years old. I've been cooking for 40 years. And suddenly Mary's going to say what she thinks of it. And if she says, I don't like your lasagna, yeah. I'm afraid my reaction is, sorry, Mary, it's my mum's lasagna.
It's brilliant.
You can't not like it. What are you talking about? Yeah. And the problem with being a home cook is, in the end, the most important audience is your family, the people around your table. So the times when the judges gave tough comments for all of us was quite emotional. I mean, because, you know...
It's what you've always done.
Can't diss my gravy.
No, of course not.
What are you doing?
Ed, you're, of course, a former shadow chancellor. Did I get this right? Did you say that Mary Berry... Lovely Mary Berry, who once invited Sam's kids into her garden to pick blackberries. Did you say that Mary Berry is tougher than Tony Blair and Gordon Brown combined?
Much tougher. Well, of course she is, because first of all, she's Dame Mary Berry, and she's like the doyenne and, you know, peerless. And, you know, she never makes mistakes, does she, Mary? Can you ever imagine Mary ever burning anything, getting a recipe wrong? Gordon Brown, Tony Blair, they're politicians, of course, they make mistakes. But more importantly,
yes,
you know, with Mary, I mean, with Gordon Brown, if he got something wrong, it was my job to say to him, don't do that. You know, that's the mistake. You're wrong. With Tony Blair as well, because political leaders, you need people around you who tell you, you're an idiot, stop, think. But with Mary Berry, can you imagine saying, Mary, I'm really sorry, you're wrong about that. I don't like your lasagna, Ed. Well, I don't care. What do you know? So basically, we were totally intimidated. Whatever she said, she's funny, but she's very fierce as well. And but whatever she said went, which is as it should be. Never the case with Tony Blair or Gordon Brown. Never the case even with the Strictly judges, who, to be honest, although I didn't, as our kids said to me, if Craig Revel Horwood said that my jive was no good, what do you expect? I mean, look at me. But... with the cooking, it was a bit more difficult because,
yeah,
you know, I cared more about it and what I could do.
I'm just thinking of a Sunday roast now. My mum's Sunday roast is the best Sunday roast on the planet. And if I go to somebody else's house, even if others would disagree, you don't, do you? Because it's the one you grew up loving.
We had a nightmare, though, and actually I talked to Yvette about it, and we decided we had to talk about it openly, because I think in the end, when you have problems in your relationship, sometimes being public and open about things can really help and get other people's support. And basically, I've always done a dark, like caramelised gravy with roast beef or roast chicken. Day before I'm going on the show, Yvette says, Mary Berry will like a lighter gravy. So I spent an hour and a half in, you know, stopping the gravy going dark, fighting to keep the temperature at the right level. I go up. Angela Hartnett says, it's a bit light, this gravy. And Mary Berry says, this is not really a gravy, it's a sauce. I'm like, a dark gravy. I stood there, I couldn't believe it. I went home and said, what did you do to me? You changed my gravy. And I got dissed by Mary Berry for being too light. Who likes a light gravy? Why did I listen? Are you blaming me? I said, no, I'm being loyal.
Yes.
But it went wrong.
Well, look, it's absolutely fantastic. It's called Celebrity Best Home Cook. If you haven't seen it, you can watch the whole series via BBC iPlayer right now. And Ed, well done for winning. Always lovely to chat to you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Russell. It's good to be with you.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you feel like you're not doing enough exercise in lockdown, then switch off now, as you're about to feel lazy. Billy's Big Red Nose Day Challenge will blow your mind. And here to tell us all about his triathlon-inspired fundraising shenanigans is a young man that's as tough as they come. It's the incredible Billy Munger!
Billy Munger! Morning,
how
Billy!
Are we doing?
All right, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
So Billy, we're going to hear all about this incredible challenge that you're about to undertake. But before we do that, for those listening who don't know your story, Can you tell us through your life as a racing driver and literally from the very beginning when you were 6 years old and you got your first go-kart?
Yeah, so I started out in go-karting when I was 6 years old. My dad actually bought me the go-kart when I was two, and the guy he bought it off just couldn't quite believe when he saw me in the front of the car in my baby seat that I was meant to be driving at in a few years' time. So my dad was pretty keen for me to get involved in motorsport. Kind of went from there, really, became something we did for a bit of fun. So every weekend, pretty much, we'd be out across the country or across the world racing. And then when I was 17, I was competing in F4, and I had an accident where I became a double amputee as a result of the crash. Since then, it's just been getting back to racing for me, and now I'm taking on this challenge for Comet Relief.
But what's amazing is watching the documentary about your life, which I did yesterday, I'm sure it hasn't always been this way, but you seem incredibly positive about everything still after what you went through.
Yeah, I mean, when you go through something like that, I guess I mean, everyone has hurdles in their life that they have to face. Mine was obviously a bit more visible in the fact that I became an amputee, but I don't think there's any other way I'd want to be about my life, really. If you're not positive, if you're not a positive person, it can translate to those around you. And luckily for me, the people I had around me were so strong and positive that I think that came across into how I approached the situation.
Billy, you've been on our radar for a few years, not least since you won the Helen Rollinson Award at the BBC Sports Personality of the Year. And, you know, you were so quickly back into racing after your accident. But then I read about this latest challenge of yours and I thought, my goodness me, he does not like making things easy for himself.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I mean, this challenge for me is completely out of my comfort zone. It's something that came to me at the perfect time, because like a lot of people during lockdowns, I've had my ups and downs with fitness, and I know at the start of the first lockdown, I let myself go. It was like a nice few month holiday, but then after that, I realised obviously my normal reason for training was to compete in the car and to perform out on track. So not having that in 2020 because of COVID, I lost that motivation. So I had to find a different motivation for training. Thankfully, I did find that. And then the challenge came about to me when I got myself back to a really good place physically. So I thought, why not? If I'm going to tackle it at any point in life, I might as well do it now.
So we better tell people what you're doing. This is a Billy's Big Red Nose Day Challenge. It starts next Monday, the 22nd of February. Just to remind people, you are a double amputee. And what are you going to attempt?
So I'm basically going to be completing an Ironman distance, so 140 miles across 4 days. And that's going to be done by walking a marathon, cycling about 100 miles and kayaking about 18 miles across the 4 days.
It's extraordinary.
And you haven't cycled since your accident 3 years ago, and you've never kayaked before?
No, the first time I jumped in a kayak was probably the second week of January of this year. So, yeah. Only about just over a month ago probably now, and I'd never cycled since my accident. So cycling was something I enjoyed before, and I didn't know whether I'd be able to cycle a normal upright bike as a result of doing this challenge. We didn't know how that would look, that part of the journey would look for me. But yeah, over the last few months, I've learned how to cycle from scratch, and yeah, now I've got 100 miles to do next week.
Are you confident? Are you nervous? Are you looking forward to it? Are you hoping that the weather's nice?
I mean, the last week has been my biggest week of training before in sort of preparing for this, as we're sort of tapering down now and sort of easing back the training so I can get a bit of rest and recovery in this week. And yeah, the conditions were far from ideal. We were at one point cycling into a headwind where there was snow coming at us, me and my trainer. So at that point, I kind of thought to myself, what on earth have I signed myself up for? But away from that, I mean, I'm getting better and better in each sort of discipline as the time goes on. So like I say, it's out of my comfort zone. It's something I've never done before. So there's part of me that, as much as I can prepare, and I have prepared as well as I possibly could have, until I start the challenge, I really won't know how all that preparation is sort of where it's put me.
There's something magical, isn't there, about getting outside your comfort zone, though?
Yeah, it has been a really amazing experience for me. I've learned a lot about myself in the last few months. And obviously the fact that it's for Comic Relief and such an important charity that does such great work is just, that gives me so much motivation, especially on days where, because there definitely has been days where I've not fancied going down and doing sort of 3 hours on a turbo trainer or anything like that, and like racking up the hours like I have been doing. So, I've got a great sort of motivational tool in that, the fact it's for charity behind me.
Billy, you're a total inspiration. I mean, you should really inspire me and Vass, because Vassals and I have been talking about potentially canoeing the length of the River Severn. And then basically we had meetings about with other people who knew what they're talking about, and we've just gone quiet on it, haven't we? I think we thought, quick, that's a long way, 200 miles in a canoe. But what you're doing is just so much tougher. And it should inspire people like Vass and I to, you know, put our money where our mouth is and crack on. So listen, if you want to support Billy, go to comicrelief.com/rednoseday or billymongerracing.co.uk, and it's going to be made into a documentary as well. I saw that. That's cool, Billy. A BBC documentary, 1 hour documentary following the highs and the lows of it.
Yeah, so they've been following me throughout the whole preparation, and that's going to go out some point during Red Nose sort of day week, that week, for Comic Relief. So yeah, it'll be actually quite interesting for me to watch, because it's gone past, the last few months have gone past so quickly that I kind of lose track of the fact that when I started this, I couldn't do these disciplines. So, no, hopefully we can raise a lot of money for such a great cause.
Good man. All right, Billy. Well, best of luck, buddy. We really look forward to seeing the documentary. And good luck for Monday.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
To get involved, comicrelief.com/Red Nose Day or billymongerracing.co.uk. What a star.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Puberty's a minefield of high emotion, hair in places you didn't know you had, and skin that will just not behave. Well, fear not. His new book, How to Grow Up and Feel Amazing, is out today. So if your little fella has questions about his little fella, then look no further than this little fella. It's the wonderful Dr. Rand!
Yes! What an intro! Wow! Okay, I'm putting that on my CV, that one.
Oh, Dapper Dave, God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Ranch.
Because also, knowing Dr. Ranch, because he's been in so many times before, you knew you could get away with that. You knew he'd love it. You knew he'd love it.
Yeah. It was all good fun.
Oh, mate. Thanks for coming on the show. It's great to have you on, as ever. So your book, How to Grow Up and Feel Amazing, The No Worries Guide for Boys. Obviously, your idea. When did it come about? And why is it so important for us to have this book in our hands if we're a boy going through our teens?
This has kind of been an idea. I mean, it was written and finished probably just about a year ago, actually. It takes that long to get a book out. But the idea came about because, obviously, there's a lot going on in young people's lives right now. There's loads of stuff out there from the perspective of girls, quite rightly. There wasn't quite so much for boys, and what was out there wasn't very up to date. So there was a real need to create something that I think boys right now could use. And I also kind of thought, I want to create and write the book that I would have needed when I was growing up. So I've poured everything that I've learned from my own growing up experiences right through to all my professional stuff that I do, working with young people, and I've chucked it into this book in the hope that it will be beneficial for any young man, any boy, anybody else that might be interested in the challenges they're facing, their parents, their carers, their siblings, their friends, anybody around the ages of 10 to 14-ish. But I reckon it's probably some older people. Some more people our age possibly might find it useful as well.
Listen, absolutely. I'm 45 years old, and I grew up born of two parents, John and Joy, who are the most liberal parents you could ever have. They taught me everything. I was so comfortable. Me and my sister Nat, so comfortable talking to our parents about anything. However, I read the book cover to cover yesterday and learned stuff that I had no idea about. And I'm 45 years old, you know, and I thought I knew it all, but I read the book and I was like, what? Are you kidding me? The interesting thing you say about boys and girls, though, because Vass and I were chatting about this off air, it was definitely a case when Vass and I are both 45 years old, when we were in our teens, this was the case. Is it still the case, do you think, that girls talk to their girlfriends more than boys talk to their boyfriends about how they're feeling about stuff?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's something that needs to change. And there's a strong message that I've tried to put into this book all about talking. If you're struggling, talk. Never feel afraid to show your emotions. Never feel afraid to be vulnerable. It's okay to be strong, but it's also okay not to be okay sometimes, and always seek help when you need it. And I think that traditionally girls have always been more ready to open up to each other and speak up, and boys haven't been given that permission. And I've tried to do that in this book because I think it's so, so important, especially with all the stuff that's happened over the last year. There's so many things that young people in general want to talk about. And I think boys especially right now need a bit of a helping hand.
I read a book once called Growing Up as Girls, because I obviously have two daughters, not obviously, but I do. Yeah. And I read and I learned so much. So I think it works both ways. So one of the subjects that you talk about is on the online world, cyberbullying, social media, etc. Yeah. Obviously a world that, I don't know how old you are, but a world that Vassos and I never had to deal with. Although we're on social media now, we didn't have to deal with it through our teens, which we know is much tougher. Are there other aspects of the book that maybe in our generation we didn't have to deal with it, but they do now?
Well, yeah. So I'm of a similar age group to you guys. I'm in my 40s as well. So I had to cut my mind back quite hard.
That devastates me. Look at his photo on the front of this book. He's the same age as us, Pat.
Yeah, that was taken 12 years ago.
Yeah, I made sure they used the good pictures.
And a filter.
We cover everything from, you know, and there's an up-to-date guide to puberty for boys and girls. There's a lot of chat about mental health, which I think is hugely important right now, and looking after your mental health and your mental well-being. There's loads of chat about relationships, different kinds of relationships, different kinds of families. Obviously, we talk about romantic relationships as well, because it's important that boys are prepared for that when they're ready. But we try to be as inclusive as possible. It is not just one kind of relationship that we talk about. We talk about the online world, which is huge right now. You and I didn't grow up with it, I know, but we've kind of, you know, been eased into it as we've grown up. But young people are now just, it's just part of their lives, and they need to learn how to use it safely. And then there's just a whole chapter on living your best life every day. Just the little things you can do every day just to get the most out of your day and be the best that you can be.
So listen, it's great for boys. It's great for teenage boys, teenage girls, 10 to 14 year olds, but older than that. And I tell you what, if you're like me, you've got kids who are maybe 7 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old, and you're already starting to worry about how you're going to discuss these topics with them, then as an adult and as a parent, this is a great book to read, because we'll see how you write it. And I go, that makes sense. You know, it does. I learned so much from it, Dr. Ange. I loved it.
Exactly.
I thought it was great.
And there's an audio book as well. So if anyone doesn't fancy picking up a book and going through that, you know, you can just have a listen in the car, have a listen together with your young people as well.
Oh, that's a great shout.
Yeah.
You just put that idea in my head. So in the car with your kids, listening to the audiobook of it, and then then pausing and discussing. Wouldn't that be a brave thing? Well, Dr. Ange, what an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It is beautifully written. It's very, very entertaining and light-hearted, but also covers all the topics that we need to talk to with our kiddies. Dr. Ange, How to Grow Up and Feel Amazing, the No Worries Guide for Boys. Definitely should also be read by girls. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We will send your intro through on an email so you can whack it on your phone or whatever.
Amazing.
All right,
Thank
buddy.
You very much. Take care.
And you, bye now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, the best bits from the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky. Chris will be back next week, and don't forget, subscribe now and you'll never miss a week of the Brekkie Show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.